supposed to take the initiative. Okay. So, you know, my apologies, my apologies for things getting more and more vague, but on one hand, I feel that I really have to say something about where is it coming from, where is what is Chern Simons, how is it related. On the other hand, there is just no way to say it precisely in the time that we have, and also in the time that I have to prepare, to be honest, okay? But both things make it much more and more vague, but you know, I think this is asymptotic vagueness when we converge to the end of the week. And I will do my best to restart with things that completely make sense on Monday morning, talking about W. So when I restart with W, it will be again completely concrete, at least for a while. Okay? And then at some point it probably will grow vague again, because again there is too much to say and not enough time. Okay, and also not enough time for me to prepare, to be fair. Okay, anyway, so back where we were. I want to argue that those cosmic counts, I've already argued that those cosmic counts are the same as computations of integrals of volume forms. And now I want to tell you that these computations of integrals of volume forms come from quantum field theory. And all I want is to give a very, very kind of hint, how could it be? Okay, and that's all. Just answer the how could it be without any detail. So basically, there is a certain quantum field theory, and I'm claiming that at the end you can replace it by a sum over some kind of Feynman diagram of, for each diagram, a sum integral. So sum over combinatorics, integral over continuous parameters. Okay? The only thing you need to know is that the form of this integral. What is the form of this integral? It's the exponential of something quadratic, okay? In fact, yeah, of something quadratic plus something cubic. And all of this is multiplied by a power series in the integrand. The integrand is A. This is a power series in A, because one way to define it is by this power series expansion that I mentioned, this iterated integral expansion that I mentioned last time. So this is a power series. This is quadratic. This is cubic. That's the only thing you need to know. This will give at least a vague explanation why we come to Feynman diagrams at the end. Making it concrete will be a, you know, much harder work. So let me now start from a general situation in which I have the integral of something quadratic plus polynomial. Okay? Sorry, the exponential of something quadratic plus a polynomial. So let V be some finite dimensional vector space. Think Rn. I don't know why I wrote vector space. Just Rn. Okay? dV is the Lebesgue measure on V. Again, just the measure on the standard measure on Rn. Q is a quadratic form on V, which amounts to saying that you have a linear functional from V to V dual, and Q of V is LV evaluated on V. Okay? The pairing of LV with V. That's what a quadratic form is. And then I want to compute the integral over V of some one half of Q plus V. Why one half? I don't know. Of course, it makes the details better, but it's only at the level I'm doing it, it really doesn't matter. It's not clear to me why I kept some factors and not others. Okay?
So integral is over, is that a V or?
V, over V. Sorry, I mean the sort of V is V is this V, right? And the two lines got connected, so it looks like a delta. I'll eat it afterwards. Anyway, so furthermore, let me assume that P is small relative to Q. Also, please ignore the fact that this is divergent. Right? So the way to fix it is either to assume that Q is negative definite. If Q is negative definite, then E to the Q is kind of going down at infinity, and P should also be somehow negative. Or put an I times everything, and if you multiply everything by I, then it's an integral of a phase, but the phase is fluctuating very, very rapidly towards infinity, and then there's these phase fluctuations cancel. So ignore this, okay? So the only thing I want to know is that P is small relative to Q. Now you can ask, what is the justification for that in this case? So why is P small relative to Q? The answer, because of this coefficient K here. I'm really looking at K goes to infinity. When K goes to infinity, there is some way of renormalizing. So you multiply, you replace change variables by A goes to A divided by square root of K or something. And then you can see that relatively speaking, this term becomes smaller than that. Okay? So just take it for granted that I can assume that P is small relative to Q. Well, if P is small, in fact, I don't care. If P is small, I can replace it by its power series expansion. I can replace E to the P by sum over 1 over M factorial P to the M times E to the Q. So I'm left with figuring out how to do the integral of a polynomial times a Gaussian. To this, I need to know about 3 minutes of Fourier analysis. So let me do a 3 minutes of Fourier analysis. Actually, there are other ways to do it, but the 3 minutes of Fourier analysis are probably the most compact way. Okay? So remember that if you have a function from a vector space to the complex numbers, it has a Fourier transform, which is going from the dual of the vector space to the complex numbers, and phi tilde of phi is the integral on the vector space of the function times, well, the pairing, the integral dv of the pairing of phi with v. Okay? And I think there is a minus I in the formula. Okay? And all you need to know about the Fourier transform is the following. The evaluation of the Fourier transform at zero is the integral of the function. Right? Because if you take phi equals to zero, then this is in the integral of f times 1, so it's just the integral of the function. Two, the derivative with respect to phi I of the Fourier transform is the Fourier transform of multiplying the function by x. So I hope you remember this from when you took core analysis or whatever it was, okay? That differentiating becomes multiplication by x, and in fact vice versa. So the Fourier transform of the derivative is the Fourier transform multiplied by phi. Okay, I think it's some integration by parts or something like that.
V to the I is a scalar?
It's the ith component of V. The derivative with respect to the ith component of phi, so I've now gotten off the idea of working in a general vector space, and phi I is just the ith coordinate of phi. Okay? So, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. And finally, and this is the only hard thing here, the Fourier transform of a Gaussian is essentially the same, is again a Gaussian, but with the inverse quadratic form. Where the inverse quadratic form is a quadratic form on the dual, which is defined by inverting the matrix L that defines the quadratic form. Okay? That's, now, okay. I'm not sure I want to prove the last one. It's very easy. It's not a hard proof. It's a straightforward computation. Okay? But I'm not sure I want to prove it. I only want to remind you that at least in one form of the Fourier of a proof of the Fourier inversion formula, that's a key point. So basically, the Fourier inversion formula says that the inverse of the Fourier transform is itself. So if you take the Fourier transform twice, you come back to where you started, maybe with some inversion or something. I mean, maybe instead of getting back to f of x, you get back to f of minus x or something like that. Not maybe, okay? But more or less, the inverse of the Fourier transform is itself. Why is it true? It's true because, or one proof of why is it true? It's true because first it's true for Gaussians. Namely, the Fourier transform of a Gaussian is again a Gaussian, and then the Fourier transform of this is a Gaussian with the inverse quadratic form, and when you invert the quadratic form back again, you come back to where you started. So it's true for Gaussian. Then it's true for translated Gaussians, because translation after Fourier transform becomes multiplication by a character, and multiplication by a character after Fourier transform becomes translation, unfortunately in the opposite direction, but and that's why it's not quite.
Really?
Yeah? Yeah. If
you're talking about Gaussian, and Gaussian, you need to get back to Gaussian. This one is negatively definite.
Oh. Could I got it wrong? It's possible that I got it wrong, but it's possible. Okay. Anyway. Well, I'll have to think about it. You're right, as it is, it sort of doesn't make sense, because if this is negative definite, this will also be this will be positive definite, so the minus is probably incorrect. Okay. And then now I know the Fourier inversion formula for translated Gaussian, but you see every function in the world can be approximated by a linear combination of translated Gaussians. I mean, again, this requires a more detailed proof, but basically that's the proof. Anyway, that's all you need to know about the Fourier transform. So now let's implement it. Let's use it. So let me compute this integral. The sum I just copy as it is. And let me compute this integral by replacing it with the Fourier transform evaluated at zero. So take the Fourier transform of that, I claim it's that, evaluate, and then I evaluate at zero. Okay? Now, what's the Fourier transform of a polynomial times a quadratic? Well, the quadratic becomes the inverse quadratic, and the polynomial becomes a differential operator, right? Each multiplication by vi becomes differentiation with respect to phi I, the corresponding phi I. So whatever p was as a polynomial in the vi's, you just turn it into a polynomial in d phi I. Okay, that's it. Okay. Now I want to compute it at phi equals zero. So again, I'll expand this as a power series. And because again, it's an by the way, sorry, I mean, in some sense, I'm already done because the integration disappeared. I had an integration exercise and now it's an algebra exercise. But let me now do the algebra exercise. A good way to do the algebra exercise is to expand this once again as a power series. So you get, instead of summation just over m, it's now also summation over n with n factorials. And it's sort of funny that I've set pi equals 2 is equal to I is equal to 1 because I didn't want to bother with the coefficients, but I did keep the minus 1 to the n, which apparently is wrong. So I get this double summation, okay? But in this double summation, at the end I substitute phi equals to 0. So here I have a polynomial in differentiation, here I have a polynomial in the 5, the only way I'll get a contribution is if the degrees match. Because if I differentiate more than I have phis, I'll get 0. And if I have more phis than differentiations, I'll get 0 because I substitute at phi equals to 0. Okay? So now let's do this combinatorics. And first of all, I have to remind you how differentiation works. So I claim that the third derivative of x cubed, if you apply the third derivative with respect to x and then the second derivative with respect to y to x cubed times y squared, notice that I had to use degrees that match, okay? I claim that this is equal to 3 factorial times 2 factorial. Now, I'm sure that you know it, but let me remind you why. Okay? So one way to think of it is to think that that you have 3 differentiation operators, they kind of want to swallow x's, and you have 3 x's, and likewise you have 2 y's and 2 differentiations with respect to y's. Each differentiation with respect to y wants to swallow a y. Each y wants to be swallowed by some d to dx. And the value is the number of ways of pairing the derivatives with the monomial, with the factors, with the x's or the y's, okay? So since there are 3 factorial permutations here and 2 factorial permutations here, that's the answer. Okay? So now let's do the same for a situation like the one we had. So where we were, we had a polynomial in the derivatives multiplied by a quadratic in the variables. Okay? But the polynomial was raised to some power and the quadratic was raised to some other power. One was m, one was n, I don't remember which is which, but m and m had to match, I mean the overall degrees had to match, otherwise we'd get 0. Okay? So I just want to and our polynomial before was general, but since I'm going to apply it to the Chern-Simons case, where the polynomial is cubic, it's a over j over j, I allow myself to restrict my attention to a general cubic polynomial. And again, Einstein summation assumed. Okay? So repeated indexes are summed over. So how do I do that? First of all, how do you cube a polynomial? So probably the best way to do, well, one way to do it is to multiply it by itself 3 times, but I don't want to have the same summation variables in all 3 places. Okay? Right? I mean, it's true that sum of ai squared is equal to sum ai, but I prefer to write it as sum ai, sum aj. I want to make the variables distinct, just to make it a little bit clearer. Okay? So, I write it as lambda pq times phi p phi q. But I didn't even bother to write the phi p phi q because by now they're a part of the notations, are these circles. Okay? And then lambda p prime q prime phi prime q prime and lambda p double prime q double prime. Well, okay. Likewise, I do for the derivative. So I have a lambda I j k derivative with respect to phi I, derivative with respect to phi j, derivative with respect to phi k, and so on. Okay? And then, what would be the answer? The answer is the sum of all ways of pairing a derivative with a variable. So it's the sum, it's a sum like this. But what is the summand corresponding to this sum? So the summand, if you do this, the summand corresponding to this sum is, sorry, the summand corresponding to this diagram is, well, you see, the only way a derivative of a variable will give you non-zero answer is if the corresponding indices match. Like, d to dxi of xj is delta ij. So the only way you'll get a contribution is if j is equal to p. And if, I mean, a contribution coming from this diagram is if j is equal to p, if I is equal to Q, if, and so on. So in fact, I can read off the contribution coming from this diagram just by looking at the diagram, okay? And the contribution will be lambda ij, oh sorry, lambda ijk times times lambda I prime j prime k prime, lambda I prime j prime k prime, times lower lambda up p is j, q is I. So j I times lower lambda times p prime is I prime, q prime is k. So I prime k, and so on. Okay? So I can read off the contribution from the graph. Now, if in addition, I know that the lambda pqs are symmetric, well, they are, because I mean, I'm talking about a quadratic form. So the lambda pqs are symmetric, and the lambda ijk are also symmetric. In our case, they are. Okay? Then the contribution only depends on the underlying graph. So the overall contribution will be a summation over all trivalent graphs that you can write, all the trivalent graphs. So I wrote here two possibilities, but I really meant this and this. These are the two possibilities. By mistake, I wrote the same one twice. Okay? So each such graph, you can read off the corresponding contribution just the way I did. So in fact, these are the indices are dummy variables. So basically, I would have to write I, J, K, I prime, J, K, K prime in an arbitrary way. Here I could do I, J, K, I prime, J prime, K prime. And then I'll get a factor of inverse quadratic form for every edge and cubic for every vertex. Again, inverse quadratic for inverse of q for every edge and p for every vertex. Is it clear? And of course, then there will be numerical coefficients. You will have to count how many times this diagram can be realized in this form. And again, it's a combinatorial count. It's some number of factorials divided by the number of automorphisms the diagram has. But better left out right now. Next, so now let's go to Chern-Simons, to the case of Chern-Simons. So in the case of Chern-Simons, what was the case of Chern-Simons? You had integral over omega 1 of R3 G, so a space of G valued 1 forms, of some path ordered exponent, sorry, some holonomy. And what was the holonomy? It was, so, I mean, we had a formula for that. It was some sum of iterated integrals of over T1 less than T2, ta-ta-ta less than Tn, of the connection evaluated at gamma 1, sorry, at gamma of T1, gamma being the knot. Times the connection evaluated at gamma of T2 times ta-ta-ta-ta, and maybe you have to take the trace of all of that or something like that. But again, I'm at a level, I'm doing it at a level of detail that's unsensitive to, that's not sensitive to all of that, times the exponential of 1 half A wedge dA, sorry, integrated, plus 2 thirds A wedge A wedge A. I don't know why I'm keeping 2 thirds. It's actually crucial for various things, but not at the level of detail that I'm looking at. Okay? So what would be the corresponding perturbation theory? So you will get, it will become again a sum over diagrams. But let's see which features go into the diagrams. So Q is D. Okay, so the quadratic form is really coming from the exterior derivative. So let me lie and tell you that the derivative, sorry, that the inverse of a differential operator is given by an integral kernel. And this is often true. D is by chance not quite invertible. So I'll have to worry about it later, okay? But generally speaking, the inverse of a differential operator will be an integral kernel, will be an operator defined by an integral kernel, okay? Q, sorry, not Q, P is 2/3 A wedge A wedge A, so it's cubic, but I'm lying to you, it's actually the integral over all points of the manifold. It's a sum over all points of the manifold of A wedge A wedge A wedge A. A wedge A wedge A. Sorry? Okay? So therefore, the thing corresponding to a diagram, so here is a diagram, I'll talk about the circle outside in a minute, but the vertices will come from the A wedge A wedge A, and since each A wedge A wedge A was actually a sum over all points of the manifold, each vertex will become an integral over all points of the manifold. So you will get iterated integrals over R3. Okay? But then there is a special vertex. There is so far I've dealt with the so-called propagators, with the edges. The edges will be integral will involve integral operators. The vertices will involve integrations over the manifolds. But there is, and by this I've dealt with this and with that. But, you see, I have something in addition this time. I'm not just expanding this to a power series and therefore getting many A-wedge-A-wedge-A vertices. I also have an additional prefactor, which is in itself a polynomial in A, of an arbitrary degree, of a degree that might be rise, might be anything because it involves a summation. So there is an additional one-only vertex. Okay, so you get an arbitrary number of propagators, an arbitrary number of interaction vertices, but and an additional single vertex, which has an arbitrary number of legs coming out of it. Okay, because it has an arbitrary number of A's in it, so it's really a sum of the convention. Is instead of drawing this vertex the way I drew it now, you kind of blow up from the middle and draw it as a circle with edges going towards the middle. Okay? And now the kind of diagrams that I get is clear. The kind of diagrams that I will have to study is, should I take a picture? Sorry. Yeah, so the kind of diagrams that I have to study are those that have one special vertex which I mark as a circle, which I pretend is a circle, which has some number of legs going inside. Of course, I mean, originally it was outside. Then an arbitrary number of trivalent vertices, and all of this is connected by trivalent vertices, I said. So all of this is connected by edges. Now, what is the expression corresponding to such a diagram? Again, it will have an integration per vertex. All each one like that is an integration on R3. Each of these, so you see, I actually lied to you. I mean, the vertex itself is an iterated sum. So I have to sum over all placements of this A along the knot. In fact, independent placements of the different A's along the knot, not quite independent, ordered. Okay, so the best way to think of it is to think that each of these is summed over all ways of placing it along the knot, and then for each edge you'll get an inverse propagator. You'll get an inverse of the quadratic form, which is some messy integral expression. I think this at least morally justifies how you will get the kind of integrals I studied before. But now,
one more the things starting from the skeleton or on the circle, they will correspond to iterated integrals, basically giving you the holonomy of the knot.
Yeah.
But the number of these is equal to. So if you have n of these starting on the circles, then you're considering the nth iterated integral?
Yeah.
Okay, so as your diagram becomes more complicated, you're taking more and more terms of the series, essentially.
Yes.
And this is where it's coming off.
Yes, correct.
Question. So why in that polynomial term, a connection corresponds to one leg on the circle, on the skeleton?
Because again, the circle really stands for a vertex with many things, with many edges coming out of it. The number of edges coming out of a vertex is its degree as a polynomial in the integration variable, right? The number of edges coming out of a vertex is its degree as a polynomial. The degree of this as a polynomial in the integration variable is the number of A's that occur in it. The integration variable is the A. End of story. Okay.
And the fact that each leg coming from the circle actually ends on a trivalent vertex?
Oh, not necessarily. I mean, it could have been like that just as well.
Okay.
It could have been this, sorry.
And in this picture, somehow can one see that you want to match M and N in this combinatorics? I thought that was the reason why each leg coming from the circle is ending at a trivalent vertex.
No, it's not. Even before, I think maybe I gave two restricted examples before. When I was talking about cosmic coincidences, it did not have to be that, I mean, this diagram was also allowed. So, for example, when you compute the Gaussian linking number, you're computing a cosmic coincidence in which the two chopsticks both start on the knot and end, I mean, in which the chopstick starts and ends on the knot. Okay? So in both cases, the same diagrams are allowed. Okay? So the story, as I told it, is extremely naive. Okay? The things that actually happen are much more complicated. And the reason, or some reasons, or there are several reasons, but okay, the first thing that breaks is that D is not invertible. Right? I said the quadratic form is D, but you all know that the exterior derivative is not invertible, right? So the quadratic form is not invertible. So the first thing to do is to develop a perturbation. Okay, sorry. On the other hand, we're in a lucky case where the non-invertibility of the quadratic form comes entirely because there is a group action that the integrand is invariant relative to. So suppose you have an integrand which is invariant with respect to the action of some group, then definitely a minimum point could not be non-degenerate, because each minimum point is a whole orbit of minimas. But on the unfortunately for us, that's exactly the case here. Namely, there is a group acting on the set of A's, and the degeneracy of Q comes exactly because of the group action. If you restrict to a perpendicular, to a section of the group action, then Q becomes non-degenerate.
The
group action is the gauge group action. So there is so-called the gauge group action acting on connections, and it preserves the holonomy and it preserves the Chern-Simons action, and that's why the two-thirds was crucial. Otherwise, it doesn't preserve the Chern-Simons form. So everything is invariant under some group action. So the next idea is to say, okay, let's integrate over some section of the group action. Instead of integrating over the whole thing, let's integrate over a section. But what I want to do is I want the integral over which section? I mean, there are many sections. So which one do I use? I want to emulate the integral over the whole thing by integrating over a section.
Just an orbit under the...
No, and the opposite of an orbit.
A
transverse to the orbit. One element from each orbit. So, you know, think in the simplest possible example. In the simplest possible example, you have, say, rotations in R. Okay? And so you have, you're integrating a function which is invariant under rotation. So it makes sense to integrate it on R2, but it also makes sense to choose a ray and integrate it over the ray, but then you have to multiply by a factor that has to do with the volume of the orbit. And if your orbit happened to be not a straight line, then you also have to multiply by a factor that has to do with the angle by which the orbit cuts the section cuts the orbits. When you look at these factors, they turn out to be a determinant. Both factors taken together are computed by a single determinant. So you end up integrating the original Lagrangian, the original integrand, on a section, but then you have to multiply by some determinant, some sort of Jacobian.
And okay? Sections are finite dimensional manifolds in this infinite...
No. Everything is still infinite dimensional, and the determinant is the determinant of an infinite dimensional matrix, meaning an operator. No, not Rademeister torsion. But fortunately, you look at the determinant, and in our case, but and you look at it very well, and you find that that in itself it's the determinant of some fixed matrix. Again, when I say matrix, I really mean infinite dimensional matrix. Plus epsilon times a perturbation. Epsilon meaning a small constant. I think it's still 1 over square root of k. Not, I don't think, I know. It's 1 over square root of k. But okay, but the point is, it's something like that. Okay? Now, just like there is a perturbation theory for Gaussians, it turns out that there is a perturbation theory for determinants. In fact, I can write it in 2 lines. Basically, this is equal to the determinant of A times the determinant of the identity plus A inverse B with epsilon. Okay? And you can check that the determinant of 1 plus epsilon a matrix is equal to, so you get the determinant of A, times an infinite sum of epsilon to the m times trace of the mth wedge power of the matrix. Okay? Now, traces have diagrammatic descriptions in themselves. So, you know what, I'm going too far. But what I want to say is that at the end, everything still has a diagrammatic description. And, well, not quite by a lucky coincidence, by some hidden symmetry, but I mean, casual perspective, it's by a lucky coincidence. So by some coincidence, the diagrammatics of the determinants it ends up being the same diagrammatic as the original diagrammatics that I was talking about. So basically, you still get a summation over the exact same diagrams, except that the vertices and the propagators are different and kind of contains in them both the terms coming from the determinant computation and the terms coming from the original computation. So this is, by the way, this I'm describing under the so-called Fadeyev-Popov procedure. Okay, but anyway, everything packs together to the same sum, to a sum over the same collection of diagrams, and now when you look at it, it's exactly the sum that I. It's exactly the configuration space integral that I advertised before. Okay. The flat connection here was zero.
Yes.
I'm over R3, and I'm integrating near. Well, I'm writing everything as a quadratic near zero. So the flat connection is zero.
Is it the only place where you use the fact that it's a flat connection? Is it the only point?
So if I were to do it over an arbitrary manifold, okay, I'm doing it on R3 where things are particularly simpler. If you were to do the same thing over an arbitrary manifold, then the integrand or the domain of integration is really a space of connections, and it doesn't quite make sense to pretend that it's a linear, that it's a vector space. It's just an affine space, and you know, you can pretend that the formula for Chern-Simons is this formula, but in fact it isn't. Okay, it's this formula only once you've chosen this formula doesn't even make sense because A is a connection, it's not a one form. Okay? So you get here, so you really have to write here Chern-Simons of A, but then you look at Chern-Simons of A and it's some function on the space of connections, and this function has a certain number of critical points, and near each critical point near each critical point it becomes a computation like this. No, then it will not be necessarily the zero connection. Then everything will be more complicated. Okay? But again, I'm in the simplest case. I'm doing the simplest case where all of these extra complications are, where all the extra complications are not necessary. And indeed, in the more general case, all these extra things, the Rademeister torsion, will play a role. But in the simplest case, which is not in R3, all of this is unnecessary. Okay? So I know why it was tempting to think that this is where Rademeister torsion come from, but no, it's not. Okay? So in fact, this is a part of Rademeister torsion. This prefactor, which sort of does not play a role in the perturbation theory, it's a fixed prefactor, is a part of the Rademeister torsion. But okay. What?
Your perturbation depends on K, in the sense that if you choose a high enough K, there's a less perturbative effect. Because I remember you said that B is something like 1 over square root of K.
Epsilon is 1 over square root of K.
Okay, so if you go to infinity, then you...
So where did I write the answer? So the answer is a sum of diagrams, but there is a prefactor, 1 over square root of k raised to the degree of the diagram. So if you take bigger diagrams, and the degree is measured in exactly the same way as in finite type invariants, so half the total number of vertices. So then it's 1 over k, sorry.
Yeah.
The half, I did the half twice, sorry. So...
As diagrams become more complicated, the contribution from them becomes less and less.
Yes. Yes. Correct. Again, you know, if you want to fit it in an hour, that's the level of the of detail you get. Yeah.
Could you repeat why we are integrating over the space of all connections?
Because Witten says so.
Feynman says
so. Why he said so?
No, but why Feynman gave a technique how to integrate on infinite dimensional spaces. Witten says, why this integral? So why... So... At what level do you want the answer? So...
Is this some localization stuff that you can do and then reduce to something smaller?
No.
For example, flat connections in the space of all connections, something like that?
No. Again, when I'm talking about knots in R3s, there is only one flat connection, it's zero, and it's not interesting. The interest is around it, not it. No, but why am I why do you integrate over the space of all connections? At what level do you want the answer? So one answer is that it works. So in other words, okay, first of all, you have a priori reasons to think that this is an invariant, because, as I mentioned, it does not depend on the geometry of R3 in any way. Okay? So, somehow, the metric does not occur here. I never use here any metric property of R3. So it can only depend on topology. Of course, it doesn't, I mean, that's good news. The bad news is that it doesn't make sense. The good news is that you can make sense of it using perturbation theory. Or actually, the other ways, but I mean, at least you can make sense of it using perturbation theory. How did Witten come up with it? In some sense, he just happened to be the right person in the right time. So, and he's also very, very smart. But I mean, basically, quantum field theory was developed for completely unrelated reasons. So, you know, when Witten came to the year 1988, I think that was the year, he came with a bag of techniques, which he already knew very well. And the bag of techniques was, you know, these techniques that I just mentioned, the Feynman diagrams, and several others, and he knew them very, very well in and out, okay? And,
So your relation to knots can only explain the integrand, but not the integral.
I'm not sure I understand you. My picture relating to knot has nothing to do with the integrand.
So I thought you were dissecting the entire integrand to different pieces and related to different features of the knot.
Not of the knot, of the finite type theory.
Yeah. So
no.
Okay, you don't have a similar picture or any combinatoric picture for the total integral over all.
No, I mean, the total integral over all connections is precisely this sum, or at least the power series expansion of that integral is precisely this sum over all diagrams. This sum over all diagrams is is an interpretation of the integral. I can't say it's the integral because the integral as it stands doesn't make sense. But this is an interpretation, okay, so this is as good an interpretation of the integral as e to the x, you know, as the sum x to the n divided by n factorial is an interpretation of e to the x.
It's a genuine expansion of the integral.
Well, it's not a genuine, maybe it's not as good. It's not a genuine expansion of the integral because the integral doesn't make sense. But it's a substitute for the integral. So, you know, there are many places in which this series makes sense, but this doesn't. In many algebraic contexts, you use e to the something. In fact, in the exercise I gave 2 days ago about deframing, I used exponentiation in the world of chord diagrams. So, I mean, many times, this makes sense where this doesn't. But it's somehow, this is a substitute of that. A substitute for that. So similarly, this is a pretend value for the whole integral. But again, if you ask how did Witten come up with it, the answer is, you know, sort of mathematicians, you know, make a random walk in the space of formulas, and occasionally they stumble upon a good one. And if you're a good mathematician, you make, you know, you walk faster, you see many more formulas per day, and you recognize better which ones are the good ones. But I'm not sure I can give a better answer.
So can I ask the same question again in a different way? So if your every connection would correspond to one link in a skeleton. If I give you another connection.
What? No.
No.
No. Not at all. No. The connections don't curve. No.
So what's okay? If that is a negative statement, what's a positive statement?
I mean, the whole hour I try to make positive statements. I don't know what to say.
But what I want to ask is, if I am to give you two connections and do the same thing, how do they come?
No. But somehow there are no two connections in the business. There is the integral over all connections. The end result does not depend on a connection. It's the integral over the space of all connections.
Which somehow you can give in terms of diagrams, but diagrams themselves have nothing to do with the connection.
Yeah.
Through these techniques, you can bring it down to a series in diagrams and coefficients in front of them, but in that expression, the connection doesn't show up.
So, yeah?
This is the whole discussionary phase. This is the idea of the most. The connection which we contribute the most is the one are the critical points.
Yeah.
So this is why we perturb around the flat connection.
Yeah.
In a sense, yes.
Yeah, but in some sense you know too much. If you forgot because all of that does not happen in R3. All of that does not happen in our picture. You don't need to know that in our picture, and it doesn't. It only makes you more confused. I agree. In other situations, when you're talking about general manifolds, then where did they do that? I mean, I had somewhere, you know. Then you, I don't know. It's gone. Oh, here. Then you first have to sum over individual connections. And I could give, not individual connections, individual flat connections. And I could spend a few minutes and explain why this is the correct, the right thing to do. Okay? But it's irrelevant in our case. In our case, what I said is a complete explanation. I mean, minus the details, but nothing at this level of philosophy is missing. Yeah, it's time to quit, it seems.
Just a historical question. I think you're the best person to ask this.
Yeah.
How much part of... Because I've heard the story that Michael Atiyah pushed Witten a lot to develop this topological quantum field theory.
Yeah.
How much part did he have to play in this geometry? Because this...
Who?
Michael Atiyah?
No, but how much part did who?
How much part did Michael Atiyah have to play in all of this? Was it all Witten?
I don't know. I think it's mostly Witten. I think Michael Atiyah. Can you turn off this thing?